Welcome, family, to our first family reunion of 2022. From our soccer family to yours, we wish you great health and fortune. On Patreon at patreon.com/thesoccerfamily, as little as $3 a month gets you that exclusive access. Got a lot to cover today. Game week 21, which is ongoing, but we had a handful of New Year's games as well as the yesterday and the day before. Be interesting to cover some of the managerial successes so far in the year. Also, maybe we can cover the best player for the calendar year and maybe a couple of other things. But before much longer, let's bring in our friends. Kevin?
What's up? I'm back for another week. Chelsea looking good again. So we are back.
There's a lot. And Josh, welcome.
What's up? Back for another week. Liverpool not looking good again, but still getting a good draw against apparently the Chelsea that looked good. And so we're off.
LeBro, it's great to see you.
What's up, man? How's everybody doing? Hanging in there.
Better than you.
Hey, let's get right into it. Let without any recency bias, just give us a couple of Cliff's Notes thoughts about the result, the performance, United versus Wolves today, Monday the 3rd.
I mean, it was just a shit performance all the way around. There's nothing left to say about it. The players look disinterested. Management seems like they're doing something. I don't even have a clue, man. You know, I'm just kind of stagnant, man. I feel like I'm in the mud. I feel like I can't even move. I don't know which way to turn. You know, it looked like we were in the match at times. Then it looked like we weren't in the match. It looked like players were interested. Then Greenwood comes off and things get shuffled around. And then they look like they're not interested. To be honest with you, I don't think it looks any better than when Ole was a manager. Hopefully things change. You know, it's just sad. You know, like I said, we're in trouble. What, a few days ago, I said we're in trouble. We're in real trouble here. Like, it's not, you know, it's not a fun time in Manchester Red right now, for sure.
Josh, if you were inspecting this house, where's the first place you're looking for the rot?
Up top, wearing number 7. I think they got played by Man City. Man City worked them into buying Ronaldo, and it has been down all summer long. I pay attention to transfer stuff. I listen, I read. All summer long, it was, we need one forward spot for a person to either play wide and push Greenwood to the center, or play in the center and keep Greenwood out wide. So they bought Sancho. So that means Greenwood moves to the center. And next thing you know, Man City finessed them into buying number 7. And I think, don't get me wrong, the guy's still a good player. He scores goals. But that's not what they needed, and that's not what they were headed. Luke Shaw today in his post-game interview said, I didn't feel when I was out there that we were all there together. That is a statement. That is not something you want to hear from one of your players at this juncture in the season in which you were trying to build on some momentum last year. You scored 82 points last year. You were moving forward. Things looked to be progressing. And even during the summer, you signed Rafael Varane, you signed Sancho, you would address two problems or 2 points where you wanted to fill players, and then you go and sign number 7, and it upsets the apple cart. I think Greenwood's been pissy. I think you're going to hear some noise about him this summer if you don't move Ronaldo on, about him just complaining, because I think it really kind of did upset the apple cart.
Kevin, there's a chance that you and Josh have telepathy over the airwaves on big chunks of this. What are your thoughts, either structurally, tactically, product on the field? And before you get into that, I just want to say, it was really tough to see that Luke Shaw interview. That was a few very uncomfortable minutes, not least for what he said at the very end about maybe the manager has some ideas, which spoke to me more than he said in the other 3 minutes, which themselves were really, really spicy. It's not nice to see this happening to a club like United, just objectively.
I think it's very nice because I think it's exactly what they deserve. You know, anybody who watches football or who watches the Premier League knew could have predicted from the minute that they signed Ronaldo, if you watched him at Juventus last season, you knew that it was not going to work, especially in the Premier League, because every single team now has two center backs that can play these 30 to 40 yard balls to spring attacks, those diagonal balls. So when you have fullbacks that push up the field, you know, and Ronaldo is in the middle of your structure, like, he cannot do nothing, right? You need two or three players to compensate for him. And unfortunately, United just do not have those type of players within their squad. If you had say an N'Golo Kante, you know, it may be a different story. Even a Declan Rice, he may have a little bit more leeway. But the way that the United squad is built, you cannot have guys like Harry Maguire and Lindelof, who aren't very good one-on-one defenders, constantly running out to the wings against elite wingers that every single Premier League has. Like, every single team in the Premier League has. Like, organizationally and structurally, it was never going to work. And the problem is now that he's an albatross around their neck. Because if you don't play him and you lose, it's, oh, look, Ronaldo's on the bench. You play him and you're losing and you take him off, you're going to have another problem. If you play him and you lose anyway, you still have another problem. So it's a lose situation any way you really stack it. So at the end of the day, I don't really bad for United, and I think it's what they deserve, because any person who looked beyond the glitz and the glimmer of signing Ronaldo would have told you that this is a terrible signing. He was never going to be able to play week in, week out in the Premier League. That's never going to happen, ever.
Yo, listen, KG, you are the biggest I told you so merchant there is. That's the 100% truth. Like, if Maguire and Shaw and all these players that we have weren't good enough, then why were we in second place last year? Yeah, we were a mile off of City, but we finished in front of you. So those were the same players. So why were they in second place then? And then, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo came in and scored some goals. He may have caused some issues up front, but that has nothing to do with our defense. That had nothing to do with our defense. That has nothing to do with us leaking goals.
It absolutely does, because what KG's talking about is somebody's got to press those center backs that are playing those 40 and 50-yard diagonals. And if it's not Ronaldo pressing those center backs, that means they have all the time in the world to play that ball. Because when you push your wing backs up far, that leaves the whole back air wide, and that's what we're talking about, is playing that diagonal ball. Someone's got to pressure that center back. You just can't let him sit there on it.
And when you look at the statistical pressure ratings, he presses just as much as anyone else.
He does not. He's in the 1%. He's in the bottom 1% of all forwards in pressing actions.
They were talking about it today. They said that he was right there at the top.
If you watch him pressing, that is a pressing that no real pressing coach would accept. That would never fly in Pep's team. That wouldn't even fly in Arteta's team. Certainly wouldn't fly in Klopp's team. So I think the guys have a point on that front. And the fact is, let's take the focus off of Ronaldo specifically and going back to the systems that United are dealing with and what will. Is there a chance that this needs to be an entire overhaul from a philosophical and playing staff standpoint?
What system haven't they tried with this group of players, right? There has to come a point in time where Van Gaal is obviously a good coach. For like Mourinho or hate Mourinho, Mourinho is a very good coach. Hate Moyes or love Moyes, Moyes has shown you the caliber of coach that he is, right? Ole is Ole, so I don't necessarily know if that counts. But at the end of the day, you know, now Ragnik comes in and he's having these same exact issues with the same exact group of players. So at what point in time do we say that it's the players and not the manager, right? That it has to be. How many times are you going to continue to look for a new manager? And it's the same Doesn't really matter who's playing, but we're not managing.
Arguing that. We never said it was no one said that it was all just the manager's fault. I'm just saying that it's just not CR7's fault. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that everyone on the team has a part to play. Everyone has to stand on their own merit. We get on here and we talk about all these players are professionals. They're getting paid. They need to play for the shirt, play for themselves, play for their own professional pride. You put 11 players out there, professional pride should kick in sometime, right? You get a group of players with that type of pedigree on paper, you put them on the pitch, even if they have little organization, whatever, they should still perform better than they did today. Running down blind alleys, not looking up, Cavani cracking a shot from 25 yards out when Greenwood's wide open into space, never looking up at all. That's not like we've played better than that. There's something systemic. Yes, I agree that's going on there, but you cannot just blame it on CR7 himself.
Josh, why don't you take the last word on this? I just want to talk about the tactical setup of today's game and just discuss a few points with Manchester United here. The 4-2-2-2, right? So when Ragnick first implemented it, the middle two in that two was a lot more narrow. And he realized that he doesn't have guys who are suited to play inside of those pockets. So he pushed them out wide. Either they were wide against Burnley and they were wide again today. So what that does is keep Sancho in, I can't remember, Greenwood out wide. And Cavani and Ronaldo are in the middle running those channels. But that leaves Matic and McTominay to run the whole midfield. The whole midfield by themselves, because not only is Ronaldo sort of probably not going to press forward, he's certainly not going to press backwards. Right? He's not going to come off of that front shoulder. Cavani might do it a little bit, but man, the Wolves today dominated the center of that park, right? They ran the midfield, and it wasn't so much, I don't think Matic and McTominay were necessarily terrible. I think that they were undermanned and underhelped. And, you know, that's just one of the tactical problems. We know you needed another 6/8. You know, when you play a high line because you want a forward press, that Maguire's going to have problems running back, turning and running towards his own goal to defend. That's going to be an issue. There are certain deficiencies with your player personnel to play a pressing game, which you guys are. I think this move with Ragnick is a commitment to that philosophy. I think the end goal was to go get. His name's slipping my mind now, but the PSG head coach who used to coach for Tottenham, Pochettino. I think the goal is to go get Pochettino in the summer because I think he wants to come and I think he wants to leave PSG. And so you're implementing some of those pressing principles, and I think you guys really need to. And I think that was the thought process behind putting Ragnick in the position he is now. He's not a manager, you know. I mean, he's not really. This really hasn't been his forte. But I just think, United have problems in the Cavani thing, man. Cavani was listening to the crowd. The crowd was screaming, shoot, shoot. He had his head down, crowd screaming, shoot, man, shoot. But Man United's in a spot. With what Luke Shaw said, I think that's a tough spot to be in. They're in a spot. Because that speaks to not only are you not sure what you're doing tactically, but that means that you're not all committed to it. And that's a tough place to be.
Another tough place to be is another year of watching Manchester City play slightly boring football with gorgeous players and extending a ridiculous gap that I'm going to ask you, Kevin, and you, Josh, to help explain, because both of your teams, I think, missed a big opportunity to close the gap on City and separate themselves from teams like Arsenal that are legitimately making a decent run. So, KG, I want to hear maybe some of your thoughts initially on the game itself, and then and just touch on what you think Chelsea's prospects are closing the gap relative to Liverpool. And, Josh, I'll want to hear the same from you. Breezy, we're going to work it in as we hear it.
The game this weekend, I think it was, it was very telling. The difference in the level of control that Chelsea had in terms of, you know, arguably playing against one of the best two or three teams in the world, control Chelsea were able to exhibit because we saw our two best, most consistent midfielders over the last probably 2 years come back into the fold. And I think one of the players that we've been missing dearly, and if you look at how our form has coincided since his quad injury, is Kovacic. you know, over the last probably year and a half to 18 months, he's probably been next to N'Golo Kanté, our most influential player. Finally. And we saw it again, right? And so I think moving forward, City are going to drop points. You know, their performance at Arsenal was kind of alarming because we're heading into January now, and we've got about a month until Champions League kicks back up. But they don't look like they have the legs or the energy, you know, to maintain this type of form to the end of the season, because Arsenal had them dead to rights, probably should have won. But we can continue on City themselves later. But in reference to the Liverpool, I think we got almost what we expected, right? We know that Salah and Mane, you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. We saw that on two occasions, and you know, Chelsea, I think all in all was a different point, and I don't necessarily think that it's time to panic. Just because the way that the Premier League is now, I foresee City dropping a hell of a lot of points. And even if you go back at the end of last season and the season previous, towards the end of the season, City have generally struggled when it comes to playing later into the spring. They're not the same City that, you know, that can run away. So I think if gap continues to grow, we're going to have a problem. But if it can stay between this 8 and 10 point range, you know, they still have to play Chelsea in, I think, a week and a half, 2 weeks. So we could claw back 3 points there. And then you cut to, you know, six to eight points. You know, they lose another game. They draw another game. You know, as Sir Alex used to call it, it becomes squeaky bum time. So we'll see when push comes to shove. But I just think that Chelsea and Liverpool need to stay within, you know, a three game margin, right? I mean, any team can go on a bad run of three games, and I think as long as they can not let their lead extend to 12 and 13 and 15 points, I think it'll come down to probably the last month.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Josh. Do you think? I mean, as Kevin's talking about some of what's possible for Chelsea, all of that seems pretty applicable to Liverpool, although I can't help but think you guys are probably a little bit more disappointed on the result from the day, given the start.
Why would we be disappointed, more disappointed? We played Chelsea, the champion, European Champions League champions at home, and we got a draw? I don't see that, like, in any other world, that's an okay result. Against this Man City team. Man City is on pace for 95 points. 95 points. That would tie the fifth most points ever in a season. I don't see them dropping points. They've won 11 straight fucking games. I don't care what their form looks like. They're 33 out of 33. Their form guide for the last five games, they've taken 15 from 15. Chelsea have taken 7 from 15. And we have taken, what, 8 from 15. I mean, what? Where's all this hope coming from? It's over. They are gone. It is done. We are all playing for fucking fourth in Champions League and whatever cups are available. Man, here's this. Man, Liverpool was desperate to sign some kind of player to influence our team during the Africa Cup of Nations as we send our two best attacking threats off to go win something for their country. Chelsea is losing probably, if not the best keeper in the world right now, one of the top three, off to go play in the African Cup of Nations. And dude, Riyad Mahrez is going to play in the Africa Cup of Nations. You know what Manchester City does in response to them losing one of their best attacking players? They sell a 21-year-old fucking Spanish international who has 22 starts and 12 goals at the age of 21 because they fucking can in the winter window. They sell a dude, a 21-year-old Spanish international. We're over here dying to get somebody in to supplement our attacking force. Man City's losing an attacking player. And to respond to that, they sell a dude. Get the fuck. It is over. Dunzo. We're playing for the FA Cup, the EFL Cup, and the Champions League. And hopefully it's staying fourth, because my team was leading last year at Christmas and was eighth by March. Hopefully that shit don't happen again either.
So one word answer, for Kevin, you're muted, but one word answer real quick. What are you thinking? Go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, sorry. I mean, Josh, that kind of speaks to it, though. We saw the form that Liverpool started the city in this season. They looked unbeatable, you know, a couple of injuries here or there, and it's the same thing with City. Let's not forget, if you look at Ruben Diaz and Laporte, they've played almost every minute of every Premier League game. And both of them, you know, back at full strength, they lose one of those guys. Who's their next alternative? John Stones?
$50 million John Stones, who played every game last year, and £50 million Nathan Ackie, who's a Netherlands international. They are deep. They've won three of the last 4 years. It took a 97 point Liverpool team to upset them. And Chelsea won in Pep's first year, and that was because Pep was just getting settled and hadn't spent, you know, $1.6 billion or whatever it is he spent on players yet.
I really don't think it's a foregone, because even in a normal year, what Kevin said about inevitably City dropping points, if you watched carefully the match versus Arsenal, it was a real stroke of luck, frankly, and that red card that made the difference with respect to that late winner. But there are 19 games so far that haven't even been rescheduled yet. And those affect every single team in the league, some more than once. I know we always talk about points in hand are less valuable than points on the board, but in the last 2 years or so of just lots of joker cards and X factors and wild cards, it's impossible to say that teams won't continue to rack up points or drop points. I think it's, even though the numbers, the math doesn't look great, I do think it's still a little bit of an open race. And then if you start talking about fourth place, it gets even more interesting. The quick yes or no answer I wanted from the Liverpool fan first, then the Chelsea fan, based off of how you feel right now, have you changed any of the priorities that you had from the start of the season? Yes or no?
Nope.
Josh. Okay.
Yes.
Josh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
What
I wanted to win the league. I wanted to win the league.
Okay.
I wanted to win the league. I don't think that's possible anymore.
Okay. And Kevin, for you, everything is still on.
Yeah, I mean, we're in every competition. It's, again, City, I'm not, so again, you watch some of these teams, right? And like when you watched Bayern in their pomp, Imperius, there was not really a place where you could get at them. You watched Barcelona in their pomp, you know, with the Xavi, Iniesta, Puyol, Pique, Dani Alves, Abidal. They're imperious. They did not have any flaws in their team. I don't see that when I watch City. I don't see the Iniestas. I don't see the Javis. They certainly don't have a Messi. So I think, again, it, as we've seen in Champions League, I think there are times where they can be extremely vulnerable. And we saw that again at the weekend. Like, great teams do not look as vulnerable as City do at times. And I think that's what gives me hope. I could be 100% wrong, and for all I know, shit, they could go the rest of the season undefeated and drop 2 points, you know. But watching them, I think their performances over the last 2 to 3 weeks have not been performances that encourage me, knowing that they have half of the season left to go. They look spent, and I think that. For me, is that the players that they have, I mean, they don't really have a young squad. They've been together for quite some time. The players that they have that they do rely on, a lot of them look like they're struggling a little bit. And you match up against a team like Arsenal, who's playing one game a week, you know, that 2 to 3% in extra running, extra pressing is going to make a difference. And then when you get down to the back end of the season, you're going to be coming up against some of these teams that are fighting for either one, top four, or two, to scave off relegation. And these guys are going to be running and fighting for their lives. So I think we're going to see, City will get a different test than they've gotten any other year this year, just because I think between Liverpool and Chelsea, I don't think that either of them are going to fall off enough to let City gain that 15 point gap so that they're able to start resting players. I think City will have to maintain the standard in order to walk away with the league. And if they can't, then, you know, we'll see.
One thing, Labrell, that is going to have some bearing on the situation we're talking about with respect to Liverpool and Chelsea challenging City for the title is the status with Romelu Lukaku. Now, it's still early days in this case, and there's probably about 80% speculation and very little fact. And the facts are is that the player has been unavailable for selection or not selected on the heels of the interview he did with Sky Sports Italia, in which he, I thought pretty elegantly, because I read some and listened to some, pretty elegantly characterized his frustration. But things that you would expect to stay in the house, and that I have a lot of respect for the player and think he's kind of clever. So I wonder what led to some of the choices, particularly not involving the club, and the interview process is pretty typical. I want to get your thoughts, and then I do want to move on from Chelsea and Liverpool, but I do want to get your thoughts, Breezy, briefly on what you think with Lukaku's situation and what could be the result there.
It just seems like to me that he's just unhappy because of the squad rotation and Chelsea having a big squad, and maybe he thought it was going to be like it was at Inter Milan, where he plays every single game. You know, the whole setup is based around getting him the target man, the ball. He's getting it a lot in the box, where he's able to bang in a lot of goals, and he's just the overall man on the team. And it doesn't seem like Chelsea's set up like that. Seems like they have a good rotating system for players to move up, to play up top. Pulisic plays well when he gets his chance. I guess the only one that doesn't really score for him is Werner. But, you know, so it just seems like it was when they paid him all that money, it wasn't just for his skill. It was for him to be a teammate, a team player, and a part of the Chelsea squad and family. And it seems like he didn't understand the whole aspect of him coming to Chelsea, in my opinion.
I can't in good faith not invite Kevin's thoughts on this.
You're on mute.
Thank you, by the way. You're muted, Kevin.
He's still on mute.
Look, while he's trying to. All right, never
sorry. Yeah, yeah. No, no. So, yeah, so I've been reading. I've been obviously checking. But the updates, the most recent updates are is that Lukaku won't be leaving this winter or next summer, right? So it is what it is. I think part of the thing that a lot of understand about Chelsea is that there's not a when they tell you or when there's the ethos that there's no individual bigger than the club. Like that it's been shown time and time and time again. I think in this instance, Kaku came from Italy. He was kind of feeling himself, you know, 100 million pound signing, you know, thinking he had the run of the roost. They probably treated him as though he was the talisman. But at the end of the day, you're in a squad littered with world-class players. So those guys look at you the same way that you look at them. Like they're not, you know, the personalities in that locker room do exist to tell a person like Lukaku, like, you're out of order. So at the end of the day, I think he probably felt that he would have been greeted with more support from the internal playing staff. But, you know, those guys didn't back him up. And so now you're kind of seeing that he's basically had to go back on what he said and apologize. Apparently they had clear the air talks this morning. At which, you know, he admitted that he was wrong for making the comments that he did. And it doesn't really even really make sense. You know, he wasn't playing at the time when he did the interview. You know, things weren't going well for him. He had gone a couple games before he got injured without scoring a goal. So it is what it is. But at the end of the day, that's the thing why that's with Chelsea. These type of things don't really bother me because I think Chelsea would sell him at a loss. to preserve the integrity of the ethos that they've always projected, that there's no one individual that's bigger than the team or the club itself. And so long as they figured it out, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, that's good business for sure. But like, I think, and Josh, let me get a quick thought from you on it before we move on to what I'd love to talk about, which is Arsenal. I don't know. First of all, it does seem like Lukaku, just as a character, is a really sensitive person, like an empath type. And I think he just takes things really to heart. It does seem like that. He seems like a family guy. And switching that stuff up can be challenging for these guys. I think we all see the numbers related to their lifestyle, but we forget that they're people. And the fact is that, and this is not a statement on Lukaku per se, but these guys go through a lot. They do, even in good times. They go through a lot. And it, you know, maybe we could take a book from the Tom Brady reaction in American football, where, you know, there's a situation where he could be kind of bridge Bernie and seems to so far be operating with empathy and at least some care for the other person. So, but what I do want to push back on, Kevin, is, you know, this isn't just like the beater car that you got for your starting driver. And if it doesn't work, oh well. And I think that's why your club gets scrutiny, is because I love that not one player is bigger than the club. Frankly, all the things that I could call out I'm proud of Mikel Arteta for emulates a lot of what your club does in normal behavior. But the fact is that with coaches, or rather managers, sometimes the playing talent, there's a kind of wantonness to how the money is thrown around and kind of a shrugging of the shoulders if it doesn't work sometimes. And so many other teams don't get to do that. And that's why Chelsea gets the pelters for it, is because when it does happen, it's just kind of ho-hum. So, you know, and you know that, and that's okay. But that's just the reality of being a mega club.
But I don't necessarily think that it's a conscious choice, right? And as a club, you can't view the player through the spectrum of their price tag, right? End of the day, if your squad is filled with quality players,
that's what rich people say. That's what rich people say. Normal people, normal organizations do have to consider the real time and midterm, long term impact on their cash outlays.
So let me ask you this, right? When you have when a player goes to Real Madrid, do you think the other players in that locker room do you think they care about his price tag?
No, they care about his attitude and they care about his ability.
Right. So is that a business decision made by the club, or is that atmosphere created by the individuals within the club who are basically training and running the club on a day-to-day basis?
I see your logic, but what you're doing is trying to merge paths that are distinctly parallel. You have the one piece of what's the value that the club is getting for their investment versus how does this talent behave? And I think that you can fairly evaluate those things independently and at the same time.
Yeah, but the value is relative, right? Because time when you're paying for a player's perspective ability, any transfer you buy, Nicolò Pepe is a perfect example. When a player comes into the squad, his price tag precedes him. Once he's there, it's up to him to show whether or not he lives up to that.
So let's stay on this. Let's stay on this because I think it's a really fair, reasonable counter argument. And the fact is if we agreed that the two key factors of ability and attitude are what will dictate largely the experience for the club with that transaction, in the case of Nicolò Pepe, we have seen so many glimpses of that ability that we latch onto it like a starving animal. Because we so badly want him to do well. Why? Because that number is really burdensome. However, his attitude and the output when that attitude happens doesn't always correlate with those hopes and those dreams. So it's reasonable to harshly criticize Arsenal for maybe getting that equation wrong. And let me move us on because
I'll here before you move on, I'll give you the if Nicolò Pepe were at Chelsea, he would have been sold last summer, guaranteed. No, he would have been gone.
No question.
And I have a comment before we move on as well.
Please.
Not so much about Lukaku. Well, let me make a brief comment about Lukaku. Lukaku's never left a place where the fan base likes him. He left Manchester United. They thought he was dog. He left Everton. They thought he was dog. He left Italy. I mean, even him writing a love letter through this interview to Inter fans. Inter fans are like, get beat, son. You left us. You know what I'm saying? He can be sensitive all he wants, but he's being it's a selfish sensitivity. It's not some sort of natural sensitivity. He's being selfish in all his actions. And the second thing that I wanted to point out, and I would be remiss if we moved on from the Liverpool Chelsea game and I didn't mention this, but Kovacic and Conte were fucking amazing. They really made our midfield. I mean, granted, we had a very old, very slow midfield out there in Milner, Henderson, and Fabinho, who are coming back from whatever things they're coming back from. But the Chelsea guys are coming back from stuff, too. They absolutely ran that midfield, and they controlled that game. I think the draw was probably a deserved point from both teams, but that doesn't mean that Chelsea wasn't the better team on the day. They were the better team on the day, and they were better because of that midfield. And we can move on after that.
N'Golo Kanté is probably the pinnacle of ability and attitude. That player is so wonderful and literally graces his team with his presence, whichever team he's on, if it's France, if it was Leicester, if it's Chelsea. Like, literally, that's a player that should be celebrated for all time.
He's the player we wish our kids would be.
100%. 100%. As a human, as an athlete, all of
everything.
All of it. Something that oddly made us happy as Arsenal fans in a weird way was the quality of the performance against Manchester City. I could go from Aaron Ramsdale to Takehiro Tomiyasu all the way up through to Thomas Partey and talk about Gabriel Martinelli. And anybody would be fair to point at the scoreboard and to point at the result and say you're nuts. But what I will say is we have watched this team improve consistently in the areas and the ways that we need. That doesn't mean it's forever. That means that we're seeing things that are a problem being addressed. Anybody that watched that game saw it. Man City haven't played against a team that did that against them this year, not in England. And it gives a lot to build on. There are some questions on this game about VAR, about the officiating.
Hold on. What did Arsenal do to Man City that no other team's done so far in England?
The quality of Arsenal's pressing and the quality of Arsenal's ball movement up the field against the City press. I don't think other teams kept City on the back foot. Typically, what you'll see is a city goes in, that team is going to hold back. And if they've got the attackers for it, they'll hope to get something on. If they can possess through midfield, they're going to do that. But City's pressure is so good, and they have so much trust in where their neighbors are going to be once they do get the ball, that they're so dangerous. So Arsenal didn't really let them dictate play for, I'd say, a good part of that first hour.
All right. Just real quick. Arsenal had 28% possession in that game. Man City completed
60 minutes.
In the game, in the 90 minutes, Man City had 72% possession. Arsenal had 28%. So obviously that has to be divvied up some way. Man City completed 644 passes. Arsenal completed 249 passes. Arsenal's pass accuracy was 71%. Man City's pass accuracy was 88%.
How many shots on goal did City have?
They had two, and so did Arsenal.
How many Arsenal had?
Two. Arsenal had two shots on goal. Man City had two shots on goal.
I'd be interested to see those statistics pre and post red card.
I mean, obviously that possession stat's not going to change that much. Because if you're talking about the timing of the red card, you can't, like, the way percentages work, it's just not going to influence it that much. I think Arsenal played them all right, and I think they were good, but I don't want to, like... I like the progress that Arsenal is making, but I don't want to overstate the performance to result. I don't think it was some like breakthrough. I mean, Liverpool drew 2-2 against them. You know, other teams have gotten draws and wins. I don't think it was I don't think it was the best performance against City.
Gabby
this
Martinelli
year.
Himself was 6 inches away from a hat trick. Just that one player with 5 shots himself. Now, were they all on cage? Well, no, because one bounced off, the other one went over because the referee screamed.
I'm 6 inches away from winning the dunk contest. I mean, come on.
Here's the thing, right? I don't think that this was any. This was a coming out performance. I don't think this was any type of transformative performance. I think in reality, this is where Arsenal should be. In reality, if you look at the money spent, if you look at the players on their roster, if you look at how long they've been working towards this, like yes, this is about what you should expect from Arsenal on a week to week basis. In the Premier League, if you're only playing one game a week, right?
And so we've been starved for it, which is why we're so glad to see glimpses of it coming back. I agree with you completely.
No, and so again, I think there's a couple of factors that went into this game. Number one, it's the end of the holiday period. City looked gassed, like I said, which to me is kind of concerning. Knowing the style that they play and the style that they rely upon to essentially hurry and harass their opponents, they did it to us at home. Like, they beat us, and if you watch the way that they pressed us, I don't think I've ever seen Chelsea under that level of pressure. Even sometimes when we lost 6 to them last year, they didn't press us the same way that they pressed us earlier in the season. So I think part of it is that we're starting to see, you know, the physical strain of the Premier League take a little bit of a toll on City. Number two, Arsenal playing one game a week. You have a younger roster. You're full of guys with energy and legs who have been, you know, who want to go out and put their best foot forward against, you know, what many people consider the best team in the world. So I don't necessarily think that this performance is an aberration. I think it's more so, okay, Arsenal, this is where you are. This is where you expect to be. What's the next step, right? So and I'll pose this question to you, Aiden. What do you deem moving forward after this performance? To you, what's a successful season?
So before I answer that, the biggest takeaway for me was Arsenal don't have to fear anybody in this league. Number one.
Listen, hold on, Mike, and let me before you continue on this point. The best thing that my football coach ever told me was, "You don't got to be scared to get fucked up."
No, that's totally fine. I'll take it. Listen,
you don't got to be scared. I will take the loss.
I will take the loss that we were fighting for versus the loss that we sat down for. And in too many cases, we had the latter, and I didn't want that. I need to see a different level of effort and application. We're beginning to see that early times. We're beginning to consider having higher expectations. To your question, I think we should absolutely finish in the top four. I think one of the two, FA Cup or Carling Cup, we should make a concerted effort for those. And at a minimum, secure European qualification, but Champions League is at this point the goal.
So you still didn't answer my question. What is a successful season? Where do you draw the line at success and failure?
It's hard.
What's acceptable and what's? Let me ask you this: at what point? What do the results have to be for you to seriously consider Arteta no longer being the manager moving forward?
That's like
he's an Arsenal fan. He'll accept anything.
That's the difference between success. That's the difference between success and failure. Because if you fail, you probably lose your job. So what I'm asking you is, at what point? Where do Arsenal? Where does Arteta need to be to make sure that his job is 100% safe?
That's not even a lens. His job is safe. What the question is?
That's what I told
you.
He'll accept anything.
What do they want? They want to be in the top four. They want to be competing in Europe. They want to be able to recruit and attract high-end talent to drive that level up. They want to be able to do it without necessarily endless access to capital for transfers. And that's how they decide that they want to do it.
Aiden, what I hear from you is the same thing I hear from every Arsenal fan around here is you guys just accept mediocrity. That's what it is. You can't even give expectations. You have no expectations
for your team. What does rejection look like? What is the appropriate rejection of reality look like?
Listen, you want me to
know, man.
We're all looking at Liberal right now. We can see it.
Josh, what do you think about this?
Shot fired.
Obviously, I don't think Arteta's going to get fired now. They're only like, what, 17 goals for and 3 goals against in the last 5 games or something stupid like that? Arsenal's on a nice little run, and they're playing good soccer. They play good soccer against Man City. I don't want it to seem like I was poo-pooing their performance. I just don't think it was as important as I don't think it was transformative. I don't think it's next level, and I don't think it's going to move them on. I think it's a nice little performance against a team that, you know, they really, everybody sort of thought was going to walk them.
And I definitely agree with you, Josh. I definitely agree with that. They look good as a team, but one hot day doesn't make a summer. You know what I mean? Just because you land a couple shots on Ali doesn't mean that you can rumble with the champ. You know what I'm saying? Like, you guys, if I was an Arsenal fan, what I would be happy about most is my team looks decent. They have a decent future. And if I really wanted anything, if KG asked me what my expectations for Arsenal would be, I would say now that we look good and we're in a puncher shot of making fourth, I'd like to see some players brought in. I'd maybe like to see somebody brought in that maybe was more of a veteran on the squad that can give some sort of leadership, that has won some games, that have been like, look, you know, this is the type of mentality that, you know, that you can have, and we can go places, we can win these little cups. I think it's hard for Saka and Smith Rowe and all these guys, these young guys, to win things. I think it's harder to win than people give credit. You know what I mean? It's hard to win.
They tried that like 4 times and it didn't work.
Well, who tried what 4 times?
Arsenal, you tried to bring in those veteran winning presences.
That didn't work. That didn't work.
Yeah, I know it didn't work. I told you it wasn't going to work.
And I told you so, Merchant.
We didn't feel good about it in real time, to be fair.
He cannot wait, boy.
David Luiz, Peter Cech, William.
What's his name? The Greek guy, Socrates. To an extent, you could bring in the second Aubameyang contract, certainly. Maybe the first one, considering how recently Lacazette had been acquired anyway. It was more the schizophrenia and the way that they did business. I wanted to touch really quickly.
Hold on, real quick. I want to say what Arsenal should be happy about their club right now, regardless of the result against City, their place in the league table. What they should be happy about is the feeling around their club. There is hope.
Right.
There is enjoyment. You guys are enjoying watching the football again. You guys feel like you got a shot. You guys are watching these young kids. You guys are watching Saka banging left footers from freaking, you know, 18 yards against Man City on one touch. You know what I'm saying? You guys are watching some fun stuff. Partey looked great against City. That was nice to see him return to form a little bit. So, I mean, you guys have a good feeling about your club, which is, you know, which is not always the case. And you should take advantage of that and enjoy that while it's here.
Dude, they're happy to sit at the adult table again.
You get mashed potatoes and mac and cheese here.
Two sausages.
And you can go for seconds without asking anybody.
Not anymore, man. You can't go for seconds anymore, man. I'm over here asking LeBron if he's got diet hot dogs and shit.
You are indeed generous and benevolent uncles, and I'll never be able to repay you. A lot of people were talking about the decisions in this match. I don't want to say too much about VAR, except it is now the center official. And I think we're starting to see that the referee in the middle is, through non-calls, deferring effectively to the judgment of VAR. And VAR is essentially making decisions. And what's concerning for me about that is it takes the management aspect of the game completely out of the referee's hands, and maybe that was part of the intent, was the referee isn't really seen as say, the conductor of an orchestra in terms of how they make sure they communicate with players and keep things flowing, for lack of a better term. There's a paradigm shift now, and hopefully they just focus on getting it better. But I will tell you, it's ridiculous to have the most diverse league, the most ethnically and culturally diverse league in the world, be officiated by one demographic from one small part of the host country. There's something about that, notwithstanding the you narrow your recruiting window and you narrow your representation and all sorts of other visible things, but the quality of the game goes down. And the point of VAR was to improve the quality of the game by having correct decisions that were rendered in a way that didn't interrupt the game more than it needed to be. Unless you guys have any thoughts on that, I do want to give a little bit of attention to Spurs. So any last alibis?
I have some thoughts on VAR.
What?
Listen, this thing about complaining about VAR is so – it's tired, man. What people don't understand is that the English Premier League knows exactly what they're doing. They know this isn't by happenstance that the system is set up in the way that it is. Like, that is part of the English game. Referees have historically been personalities and have historically played a part in the game, like it or not. Right. That's why every week when the drawings are made for what referee is refereeing what match, it's always such a, oh, we got Mike Dean this week. Oh, you know what I mean? Like it's always part of the theater. It's part of the theatrics. It's what adds to the entertainment of the league. And so to diminish that and to bring in people who may not understand what the English Premier League is, because at the end of the day, this is their product, right? And we love it for what it is. And for us to say, you know, this doesn't work for us, like that doesn't really, that to me, that doesn't really fly. It's like, these are the rules of the game. Engaging in the English Premier League, you know that this is going to be the thing. These English referees love to be part of the show. And so long as that it's the Premier League, you know, you just hope that you get more bounces your way than the other way, and you gotta roll with the punches. And so, like, to me, this VAR thing, I'm not a big proponent of complaining about decisions during the game, because at the end of the day, 9 times out of 10, if you're making a decision and you're putting it in the ref's hands, it's your fault anyway.
Fair enough, Josh.
Man, I don't like referees at all. I don't care if it's VAR. I don't care if it's a center ref. I mean, as a player, man, part of my fun was winding up a referee. Like it was the verbal interaction with the referee in between the whistles was part of the fun. So they can all go pound sand for all I care. They're all terrible. Every single one I've ever seen has always been terrible, except for the ones that call penalties for me.
So, as a former official when I was much younger,
you're terrible. Then you're terrible.
Even at majorly amateur levels, the game can happen sometimes so fast that it is impossible to make the correct decision. It's impossible.
Well, pay attention.
It's not even about that. Sometimes it can happen right in front of you. I'm literally picturing in my head incidents that happened a meter in front of me. I am trained on every bit of the action. I cannot tell you what the right call would have been.
I'll tell you. If you would just listen to me when I tell you what the right call is, I'll tell you what.
Well,
we
didn't have our headsets working properly that day, and I blame technology. So with Spurs, they are sneakily, quietly, annoyingly improving. Are they a genuine contender for top four?
LeBron. My thing is, why would you say sneakily, quietly? Are they? They didn't sneakily get Conte, did they? Nah, they didn't sneak that. You know,
they're just not getting a lot of attention because they're sexier stories than them.
Yeah, I mean, well, listen, they're technically in fourth place if they went out their games in hand. So they're already in the spot. You know, all they have to do is keep on winning. And like I said on the last pod, they look good. They look ready to fight. Conte lit a fire. I mean, Stone and Kane, the whole team just looks really good. Everybody looks rejuvenated. And frankly, I'm just pissed that we didn't sign Conte as our manager. And it's done with me. I'm over.
Shit. He didn't want it. That's what we heard, right? He didn't want anything to do with that.
Listen, Aiden. I've always had respect for your takes. You know, let's keep it civil, man. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't need that from you.
He didn't want it.
Now, KG, listen, KG had me so mad at work today that I was serving to a customer, and the customer was like, "What's wrong?" And my idiot self tried to explain to him what's wrong, and I'm sounding like I'm just
not gonna work.
I'm sounding like an angry individual, and they're just like, "Man, you know, you might need to calm down. Don't watch any football. What's making you that upset?"
He's right? No, he's not right.
Well, frankly, for anybody that would have been interested to see what Labrell had to say in the patrons chat group on WhatsApp, for a minimum of $3 a month, you can get access to that group and a lot more.
I'm back, exclusive baby. I'm accent. Back.
A lot more exclusive accent to include Josh coming back after his
well-earned
hiatus, bringing all the... And you do that at patreon.com/thesoccerfamily. But with respect to Spurs, Josh, do you think that it's really a foregone conclusion, like Labrell is indicating, that those games in hand are 3 points already in the pocket and they are effectively in fourth already?
No, I think they're getting better. I think they will get better because
this is Antonio Conte's Tottenham Hotspur
and not anybody else's. But they go, their schedule is tough, right? In the next month, they go back-to-back games against Chelsea in the EFL Cup semifinal. They go North London Derby. Then they go back to Chelsea. Then they got Southampton. Then they go Wolves. And then they go Man City. So taking out the EFL Cup and the FA Cup stuff, they go Arsenal, Chelsea, Wolves, Man City, 4 out of 5. We'll see at the end of those 5 games. That's a tough little run. And we'll see what they're made of at the end of that. If they come out of those 5 games, I mean, throwing in the Southampton game, if they come out with, say, I don't know, man, if they come out with 9 points, I think that's success.
Anything above 9 points. I would say 10
yeah,
points.
Probably 10, yeah. So that's 2 draws, 2 wins. Or no, that's 3 draws and a win, or 3 wins and a draw. But 10 points would be a hell of a get. Out of those games, so I mean, you know, they're lurking, right? They don't look like they're there, but they are kind of there. So you need to pay more attention to them, especially, you know, as a Arsenal fan, you're probably, you know, glaring down at them, sort of like they're the shark under the water that you can't quite see, but you know is there, as you swim on top with your little, you know, puffies on your arms or whatnot. So I just I don't want to get down there in that mix of fourth. I want to stay strong. Come on, boys. Let's go.
Nah, you guys are going to be in fine shape. You're going to be in fine shape.
Hey, Kev, these last 3 games have put a hurt on me. I'm feeling.
And guys, I want to get your thoughts on this too, but let me start with Kevin. Kevin, for you, who are the top 3 managers in the year so far?
Premier League.
Let me share mine and maybe get you guys.
Well,
going
I mean, it depends on what in what context are we grading them? Are we talking about overall management jobs? Are we talking about, you know,
kind of
there has to be the job that they've just done?
Like you're saying, who are the best 3 managers? Period. If you had to choose 3. Which 3 are you taking?
In the past calendar year, who's the best 3 managers?
I was thinking, even so far this season in the English Premier League, who are the 3 top managers? And that doesn't necessarily mean the ones with the most trophies or whatever. So here are my thoughts. I think this year so far, David Moyes has done a brilliant job. I think Graham Potter has done a brilliant job. And relative to the start of the season, Mikel Arteta has done a great job. With Pep Guardiola as an honorable mention, because it's not easy what he does, and it's not easy managing that squad. So
This was the most leading question of the night.
No, I'm not assuming that you all were ready for it, so I was hoping to just prime the engine a little bit.
Well, who are the best? I mean, if we're talking about just pedigree, I don't really think that's questionable. It's going to be Conte, it's going to be Klopp, and it's going to be Pep, right? I mean, that's pretty straightforward. But if we're talking about on this season and the managing job that individual teams, well, managers have done with their current squads.
Zoom in a little more. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
I would probably say, yes, Moyes would be close to top of the list with the squad that he's constructed at West Ham. Graham Potter would be a very, very, very close second. And third, I would probably have to go Thomas Frank at Brentford. They've given every single team that they've played, they've given problems. It's not a one or two, it's not a lucky thing. They play the way that they play. Mm-hmm. They're very adaptable. You know, they have a very set system, and that whatever that they're doing, they need to continue to do. But I don't necessarily know how much longer it'd be at Brentford. But those would be my three in terms of just pure management, based on the resources available at your disposal. I think those three managers have done the best job, in my opinion.
What do you think of that, LeBron?
To be honest with you, I was basing my when I was looking at the question, I thought about the eye test first. You know, what teams do I like to look at? Who makes me feel good? When I look at them, they look dangerous. They look organized. The expressions on their face. And I would actually have to say Arteta would be my number one right now. He's got his team buzzing. Like that, it seems like they're firing on all cylinders. I like that. To be honest with you, this is going to sting, but anybody who loves football has always had a soft spot for Arsenal, unless you're a Tottenham fan or somebody like that who's a close rival.
I've always done.
I just want to say hi so Aiden can hear my voice when he plays this back 1,000 times.
I'm just saying, honestly. All throughout the early 2000s, you know, everybody loved watching Arsenal. David Moyes would be my number two because I think he was left to dry. He was left out to dry after United. I think people thought his career was over. I think they thought he was washed up, and that was a foolish thought. Mm. I think he's a great manager. I think he's old school too. I think he's old school like the Allardyces and all that who have their set way about them. And they go about their way. And last but not least, this is I'm gonna put this out there just because I feel like there needs to be more. I think Patrick Vieira has done a great job with what he's doing. I would like to see more African American coaches, in the league, managers. I think that brings a different type of level to the EPL. And I've been reading a lot about what he's offering. I know they haven't got a lot of great results lately. I think they just got a win, actually. But I know they kind of went through a bad patch, and I think he's doing the right things. He's lifting the players up. The players really respect him. And a lot of the African-American players and a lot of the non-white players are really digging his style and the vibes about him. There's something non-traditional. He's not the overall Anglo-white Catholic or English Orthodox church going guy. He's more, got a swag about him. So
you saying white people can't have swag, LeBron?
No, I'm saying that everybody doesn't. I'm saying that everybody doesn't.
Not everybody's white is what you're saying.
Yeah. Everybody doesn't vibe the same, right? They don't. It's just nice to have something different. Like, I like drinking ginger ale, but every now and again, I like to have a Sprite or something.
Man, props to me.
He's certainly doing
a good job. Yeah.
Everything about the Premier League is an expression and the business case for why different people from different places brought together when they're really good at stuff is a great thing. And it's just that simple. And we have not seen Crystal Palace with this kind of attitude. With this kind of Weird assurance in a strange way. That's pretty well said. Would you?
Dude, have I had him for the drop. I had him for the drop, and they are distinctly mid-table and playing decent soccer. Right? They try to play everybody,
and they step up, and they step up to whoever they're playing. What do you think on the three kind of more on the KG criteria? Like from beginning of season to now, what are the three coaches that have impressed you the most, Josh?
So I would have to say I would agree with LeBron. I think Vieira has impressed me because I had them for the drop, and watching them play, I definitely don't think they're going down, and I definitely enjoy the style that he plays. The other one is Bruno Lage, and I know I've said a lot of shitty things about Wolves here on this podcast in the last couple weeks because, you know what, they were shitty. But they showed me something today that was completely different than what I had seen before.
What did they show you, Josh? They tried against a terrible team?
They completed more than four passes in a row, and they didn't lay on the ground for 6 minutes straight, which tells me the way they played against Liverpool was their game plan. It tells me that they figured that's the best way to get the result. And you know what? They came within 30 seconds of getting that result of that they wanted. But they thought that they could play United, and they did. So that showed me that he is flexible and that he can get his team to play the way he wants them. He's also doing it with, I don't think they just lost their best player. Pedro Neto has been out for the season. And the kid from Mexico hasn't fully returned to form to where he was before. So they don't really have all their pieces there firing, and he's able to get a tune out of them, and they sit eighth. I think that's a pretty good coaching job. And I, you know, once again, I have to commend Pep on the job he's done. I watched his teams lately, and what he's done by tucking those fullbacks inside, he's created a fucking force field around the offensive third. When you try to get out, you've got the two center backs, the two fullbacks tucked in, and then you've got the wide players, the because he likes his wingers to stay fully wide, out wide, and he lets the two midfielders in the false nine do the goal scoring shit. And it just looks so good when you see them set up in that. Look, it looks like you can never get out, is what it looks like. It looks like you can't get out. So man, Pep is, once again, Pep is just running the roost. But really, man, more props to Vieira. And honestly, I'd like to reiterate, I think Moyes is doing a great job. I think there's a lot of guys. Arteta's doing a great job. I think I would also like to give a shout out to that dickhead down in Burnley, man. You're doing a great job because y'all going down. You're going down. You're
doing a great job. He is the worst. Ginger Mourinho, they called that guy.
I thought he was going to say Steven Gerrard for a minute.
No, man. He hadn't been there long enough.
I thought he was coming with the Steven Gerrard.
I respect, I can't even think of his name off the top of my head right now, but I respect the coach from Burnley. I just hate Sean Dyche. I just don't like the style of his football. It's shit.
Josh, who's your player of the year between January 1st, 2021 and December 31st, 2021?
In the Premier League?
In the Premier League.
Edouard Mendy. I think he's been the best player in the league. I think he is one more points for Chelsea. I think he is. I think that team is in Arsenal's spot without him. I think they haven't
scored. Somebody typing?
No, I'm clicking here. No. I think, is he really? But that's my shout, man. I'm going to go with it. I think he's been great. I think he's been what De Gea has been for United this particular calendar, not calendar season, but season. I think he's been that for Chelsea, and plus he also won a Champions League, which is a huge achievement. And I think he's going to do some good things with Senegal here in the African Cup of Nations too. Senegal got a squad, and that's who I'm rooting on to bring it home at the African Cup of Nations.
They are so interesting. Kevin, what do you think of the same question?
Mo Salah.
Yeah.
That doesn't really need any explanation.
It's almost self-evident, right?
Yeah, like doesn't really need much to. The funny thing is my girlfriend started watching with me this season, and first two or three times that she saw him play, she's like, "Yeah, there's something different about him." So yeah, it's
and is she like utter layperson when it comes to soccer?
What?
Is soccer not really a thing in her life?
It's something newer to her. Something newer to her. The season, first season watching, you know, multiple games. And if somebody who's never really watched the game can tell you, like, yeah, he's different than all the rest, it kind of lets you. Not really something you can debate, right?
No, not on what we've seen from him. Honestly, not just last 12 months, but you could argue almost 18 to 24 months too. LeBron, what are your thoughts?
So, I was at the Germantown Sportsplex, and I was watching the under 14 girls play, and they have a new player. She's from Egypt. She's really good, and her shirt had Mo Salah with the Egyptian Messi on it, and you just can't deny it, can you? You just can't. Like, you know, I don't rate Liverpool at all, but my God, that guy is like, you can't. You know, there are little snippets of things in life that really make me a believer, and everybody can have their own beliefs. We're not gonna get into that, but when I see this man play football, it's something different, and I think it's even something different than like what Cristiano Ronaldo has a little bit, because Cristiano Ronaldo looks like he's working hard. Messi looks like he's just in the moment having a good time and the things just come to him. And that's what I kind of feel like Mo Salah. I kind of feel like he's a balanced person. I feel like he's humble and compassionate. And I feel like that comes out on the soccer pitch. And I feel like whoever he plays around, he elevates their game and they elevate his game. And I just think that's what it's all about in any type of sport. I think if you're involved in a team sport, you know, you elevate your teammates elevate you. It looks like the game comes to you naturally. It looks like you're having a great time with it, whether you succeed or you don't succeed. And just always staying humble and hungry. And, you know, when you put that picture together, I feel like it's Mo Salah, honestly.
Yeah, he's the kind of the default shout. However, if you look at and consider a lot of what you just said in the last minute, LeBron, another player that embodies that, and we mentioned him before, and it's always appropriate to keep mentioning him, I'd say, is N'Golo Kanté. I don't know what more you can say about someone who has just his performance against Liverpool. This was someone who had a Velcro touch on the ball. His passes were on a postage stamp wherever they were going. He was box to box. He was making tackles in the corner. He was showing glimpses of end product. The assist that he did for the Pulisic goal was a lot harder than it looked, to not necessarily to make the contact with the outside of the foot, but being gentle enough so that first bounce dies, that gives the player a chance to put that kind of power on the strike. That is otherworldly level. So with both of these players, with N'Golo Kanté and with Mohamed Salah, we can absolutely say without any equivocation that they're at that level. Last thought I would have, and I want to ask the question in a very respectful way, and just in a way that's straight up looking at what will factor X cause on reality Y. That's simple, because I think a lot of people have not the greatest intentions when they complain about the AFCON. And for me, I think a lot of that is what we see it and what we hear. But some of it is also people who are struggling with the scheduling in terms of players being asked to leave an active season to go participate in the tournament. But then again, recent Euro and South American tournaments kind of make that a moot argument as well. With all of that said, and we can be pretty quick. Which team will be most affected by AFCON in the British Premier League? Kevin.
Liverpool.
Yep. LeBron, same. Okay.
Yep. I want to mention also that, just to track back a little bit, I didn't pick Salah as my favorite player because I figured other people wouldn't. I wanted to bring some light on another somebody else. But we had three guys that were chosen that we chose for our favorite player, and we're lucky that none of those guys are assholes. I just want to say that none of those guys, I mean, seriously, in a world that's kind of can be dominated, sports can be dominated by these super driven asshole kind of people that are so focused on their goals that they just sort of don't really you know, aren't compassionate and aren't empathetic and aren't sort of understanding. And it seems like the three guys that we chose are those things. And it's nice but to I have mean, the guys.
I think, Josh, and to the greater point in the point that you're trying to make, don't you think that's kind of – you kind of see that's kind of the way that the world is – well, the game of football is going. You know, these egomaniacs and these guys who – you know, are gesticulating when they don't, when their players miss a pass, who aren't the right guys. Like, I feel like top teams no longer are accepting of that type of behavior. And if you look at City, none of these guys are, there's no one player that thinks that he's better than the next player. And as soon as he starts to approach a level, Pep puts them on the bench. And I think with the way that the modern game is going, I think we're starting to see that the days of a Cristiano Ronaldo and a Lionel Messi walking on the pitch and not being considered the best players, they're not going to win anything. They may score 50 goals, but that's no longer the recipe that's needed to win in modern football. And I think that bodes well for our game long term.
Here, here, KG, and bye, bye, yeah. Sergio Ramos.
Bye, yeah. Bye. I don't know if it's the club themselves, right? It's not the club. It's the managers at the club, right? It's the Klopps and the Peps and those guys. Their style, you know, the TTs, and these guys don't want that type of football because, you know, malingering's infectious, right? You know, you get a bad apple, that's infectious. It starts to rub off on other people. You have to cut out the rot, right? Isn't that what they say? Like, cut out the rot or it's going to go through everything, you know? So, and the other thing, KG, is that a lot of these teams also, you know, that you're mentioning aren't having a huge bad string of results. And last year when Liverpool was having bad results, they had a couple arms go up. They had a couple people act out. I remember Henderson's arms going up and, you know what I mean, when they were leaking goals in the back and playing players out of position and whatnot. I'm not saying that they were all crying out, but when you get a bad string of results and things aren't going your way, people tend to act out in any sport. I don't think that's indicative of a bad character. I just think it's an indicative of things going bad, and you have to work yourself out of that rut.
I don't think it's an indicative of a person's character. I think it's indicative of a bad teammate. And I think that's more so the direction that I'm pointing in, is that right now teams win things. Teams win things, individuals don't. So even if you go back and you watch Mo Salah for as great as he is going forward, Mo Salah was tracking 70 yards back on multiple occasions, right? Because he understands, like, that's what's needed if you want to win.
And you know, in an interesting way, a lot of that work, and I think they're seeing this, a lot of that work is almost more visible to fans. They almost appreciate that more because they know that they're going to do these types of guys, they're going to do amazing things on the offensive side of the ball, but that in between stuff, seeing that effort and application is everything.
It's part of that culture of the club, right? Liverpool recruits the person is as important as any stat on the sheet for Liverpool when we recruit. There are people we purposely don't consider because of their history. And I think Arsenal's seeing the benefit of that now once they're getting out of their, you know, they're excising their demons. And Manchester United continues to buy them. And so I think that's, you know, sort of, not to take a dig as Labrella as we walk out the door here, but but that's just kind of where we're at.
Well, I think we can leave it right there. Everyone, go ahead.
Hey, does anybody check out the championship table? I'm just wondering, does anybody
not recently? No,
I'm happy Blackburn might come back up. I have a friend, he passed. His name was John, and he loved Blackburn. He had a Blackburn tramp stamp on his back. I love that guy. Yeah, he passed away of brain cancer a couple years ago, but Blackburn went down. He hates Burnley, loves Blackburn, so I hope they come back up.
The Chilean, right? Ben Brereton Diaz, right? The newly born Chilean.
Real quickly, yeah, man. People forget that if you are, besides Chelsea, Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Man City, and Leicester City, if I'm not mistaken, the only other team to win a Premier League title was Blackburn Rovers.
Sir Kenny Dalglish,
and Alan Shearer, and an incredible campaign. We will leave it there.
economic system set up.
A terrible economic system.
Yeah, yeah. They were pumped full of money.
Well, we didn't bring this thing into the station too smooth, but I'm going to still put the brakes on no matter what. It was wonderful.
Come on, let's talk for another half an hour.
This is the conclusion of another family reunion. Listen, everyone, come and join us at thesoccerfam.com. And if you're interested, we can take your Patreon contribution as little as $3 a month.
Your takes we'll get are terrible. You
exclusive content at patreon.com/thesoccerfamily. And we look forward to seeing you at another family reunion.
Go get some food at the Common Share.